Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters for the 31st of August 2022. I'm joined by Harry.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the West is going to S. I don't know what I'd say. Nigeria bans whites from their adverts, which, very base, I'll tell you why, that's a good thing. And also Rishi Sunak spills the beans on lockdowns.
So, yes.
Gonna be good fun, otherwise.
Yeah, should be fun. Well, it's one of the most common subjects that we like to cover on here, and for good reason, which is the West is going to absolute hell. Check the title. Yes, it's going to absolute heck right now. And it doesn't take much to just look around and see what's going on. And I thought I'd just collect a few things that happened recently, including the glory of Manchester Pride. Oh, I'm so proud of Manchester right now. And also the Notting Hill Carnival, which is living up to its name, if nothing else. So I'll just direct your attention before anything else to a premium video that you and Carl did recently on the politics of They Live. How did you find this? I don't know if you watch movies. Did you actually watch this?
Yeah, of course I watch movies.
Okay.
Just not a lot of them.
Yeah,
did
you watch this?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay, that's all right. Then how did you find it? What was the discussion like?
I thought it was pretty good. It's interesting how that sort of movie probably couldn't be made today, though, because it would be denounced as, like, anti-Semitic or something.
Even though it's, like, I mean, strictly speaking,
it's got nothing to do with Jews, but
yeah, I know, but strictly, I mean, I think the guy who made it, John Carpenter, I'm pretty sure he was, like, making it from a left-wing perspective as well.
Yeah, like, he explained at length it was about the problems with capitalism, an internationalist perspective on capitalism, that you just let foreigners take all the jobs.
Yeah, but it obviously has, the film has a much broader application in terms of cultural commentary than just his original intention. Yeah. But, no, check that out. They Live, cool film. Sure, it's a cool video. But yes, so Notting Hill Carnival was not something that I was particularly aware of until this weekend, because thankfully I don't live in London.
Really? I've always kind of wanted to go. Like, I know, for foreigners who don't know, it's a carnival that takes place every year in London, and looks fun for all of 5 minutes, and then there's loads of crime every time. Like, really
literally every
crime.
Single time. And this year was no different. This year might have even upped the numbers a little bit. Like, we had a death, a rapper called Takaya Nembard, who was stabbed to death, sadly. You know, obviously this guy didn't deserve that. And police said that there were 209 arrests that had been made by early Tuesday, including 46 for assault, 36 for possession of drugs, 33 for possession of an offensive weapon, and 27 for public order offences, and 8 sexual assaults. So a good time was had by all, I presume.
And that's only the arrests, right?
Yeah, that's only the stuff that's been reported.
Like, the guys who got away with their crimes just aren't counted either. And
no.
That's just another day, another celebratory day.
Yeah, and just the other degenerate behaviour that doesn't count as a crime, but we'll be looking at that as well. So Notting Hill, as far as I can tell, was, what is it? It started out as a protest in the 1950s and 60s against racist crimes against Caribbean immigrants, as far as I could tell looking into it.
It's the narrative.
That's the narrative. And like you say, since then, you know, at first, like Pride, it may have had some political element. Well, it still has a political element, but it was mainly political, and was and has now just turned into a gigantic excuse for people to murder and loot and party in the streets.
Yeah, kind of like
as all these things turn out.
Going to Solstice at Stonehenge is just an excuse to take drugs until they cramp down on the drugs. So
yeah, but so the rapper who was killed, Mr. Nembard, who was known as TK or Stretch, who is from Bristol, was attacked in Ladbroke Grove about 8 o'clock in the evening on Monday. Police had to pull the expectant father out of a huge crowd and provide emergency first aid, and he later died at West London Hospital. This guy had a girlfriend who's pregnant, and I, you know, as much as it's awful that it happened, why are you going to this rather than looking after your pregnant girlfriend? Although, you know, you can go out and party and stuff, but you just don't expect to get stabbed, I suppose.
So that's the thing, because it is a festival, and there are people who have loads of fun there by the looks of it. I've always kind of wanted to go because I want to see both sides of the violence and the fun. But everyone knows, like, this is just hell. Like, every time this happens, like, a huge amount of crime just occurs. People get stabbed.
Yep, the footage that we'll look at doesn't look enjoyable by my metrics, but, you know, different people have different standards, I suppose. And the Met Police Federation said at least 34 Metropolitan Police officers had been assaulted. I think that number's gone up to about 79 now, so that's fun. And then they also tweeted, every year our brave officers come under attack at this event. Colleagues dread policing it, and yet nothing changes. So I don't blame them, because it seems like the Met Police just want this shut down at this point. You know, the Met Police, they can only go so far. You know, we'll go along with all the pride and stuff. We'll wear all the badges. We'll say all the slogans. But we keep getting assaulted and some of us get murdered here. So, you know, just for our own benefit, let's maybe stop this right now. I mean, I don't get if it's a big festival and all that, why they can't just have it out in a field.
No, but also, why does your festival just include loads of crime and death? Like, most other street parties around British culture, for some reason, just don't have that level of violence.
Yeah, the street parties that I've been to, mostly you get a few tables out, the whole neighbourhood comes out, they all say hello, you get nice cupcakes from Margaret down the road, you know.
I mean, let's not ignore that aspect, which is the cultural difference to people taking part. And,
well, of course not.
Seemingly the cultural difference in the level of crime you get in this kind of event as well, which is most other events go off pretty smoothly. Maybe a couple of assaults, maybe two people drunk.
Well, you mentioned the whole cultural the whole culture that they come from. I mean, the people who are going out and celebrating all of this, they're celebrating their cultural heritage, yes, but do we get to celebrate our cultural heritage? Maybe like once a year, and then we'll get the Guardian frowning down on us for doing such a thing.
You don't get
and how evil we are.
Oh, look, it's wonderful. Ignore the stabbings. Like, there's nothing of that.
Yeah, and like you say, there seems to be no standard of behaviour upheld here because it's like almost 2 million people show up for this thing sometimes. How with a small police force, are you expecting to manage 2 million people? And once again, that does reflect badly on the police who have bad things happen to them, such as a female police officer who was sexually assaulted by numerous males, I'm sure of British heritage, during Notting Hill Carnival, which was confirmed by the Met Fed boss, who said, "It's disgusting. Sexually assaulted by numerous males during the carnival. You're absolutely correct, and my thoughts go out to that individual right now." And the figures released on Tuesday said that it was 74 officers. So, yeah, that's awful. I'm sad to hear that something like that happened to a woman, basically just getting gang raped, by the sounds of it, or at least assaulted.
Gang assaulted.
Yeah, gang assaulted in the middle of the street. And she's a police officer. She's supposed to have authority, but, you know, realistically speaking, whether you're in a police uniform or not, you're a woman and a number of presumably bigger men come after you. What are you going to do if you've not got backup?
I mean, I love how this is sort of an unspeakable thing, but it's so true. Like, even left-wing TV shows have featured this multiple times. I mean, I love there are some clips, I can't remember the shows, but there's like one where this police officer who's a female, rather short, walking home to her car after work, and there's just this gang of youths, and then she like pulls out a baton, and she's just no chance, that she gets destroyed. Like, everybody knows the reality of this.
Yeah.
But when it comes to operational situations like this, we're like, huh, maybe we shouldn't send these lasses, but go ahead.
Yeah, we're more just putting them in the line of fire than anything.
Yeah.
Which is a real shame.
I know there's going to be, because there's this stupid argument as well. You get in civilian life, which is, you shouldn't have to plan for that. Like, you shouldn't expect to be sexually assaulted, which is true when you're like a civilian, right, you could argue. But when you're a police officer, like, you're expecting bad things to happen. That's the point in your job.
Also, I think just going out on your day-to-day and expecting that everyone you come across is only going to have the best of intentions for you is a terrible way to organize your life. Let's be honest.
As a police officer, especially, or a member of the military. Like,
well, I mean, just going about London, when I go about London, when I do sadly find myself there, I don't really trust anyone on the street. I'm not going to go walk around going like, oh, you know, I shouldn't have to expect that people should mug me. No, I make provisions for that, just in case. Let's take a look at some of the footage that's been coming around of some of the festivities that have been going down, some of the displays of cultural heritage, like these people here.
Yeah.
She slaps him, so he just belts her in the face. Now, I, being a proud misogynist, have been slapped a number of times by women. However, I don't just respond immediately with a closed fist straight to the face.
Hey, equal rights, equal lefts, what can I say?
Well, I suppose so, but I feel like
that's
somewhat unproportional response right there.
Yeah, but like, this is the thing. This is the problem with the clown word logic we live in. I mean, like with the sending female police officers into a situation where you know it's not going to be great for them. Like, you wouldn't want to send a female police officer into this kind of environment, and that's the reason we were making earlier. But also, in a reasonable world, you wouldn't knock out a woman for slapping you, but...
No,
the logic doesn't hold up anymore.
A reasonable man would, you know, it's not nice being slapped, but you wouldn't just respond immediately like that. But, you know, perhaps some of these people out in this festivities are not so reasonable. And we can see a bit more of this cultural celebration going on here, where they're engaging in... What I can assume is ritualistic dance, and then bam, on top of a bus stop. You know, why there were no police there? Well, I understand why there were no police, because they're probably stretched absolutely thin here, but yeah.
Moron's going to moron, and moron's going to
cause
deserve,
public
frankly.
Damage. Yeah, they're going to get what they deserve, but sadly, I feel like the people standing under the bus stop who got that collapse on them probably don't feel like they deserve that as much as the people on top.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, look at this. Like, do you see that woman's head go? It's not nice. Not nice at all. And then there's just the overall, like, crowd shots we got from this as well. This absolute mass of people. This is London now. This is our capital city. Don't you feel proud?
Well organized, I can see.
Well organized. There's a gigantic crush going on against those police officers who just cannot do anything.
Yeah. For people
in
listening,
that situation.
I don't know how many people are there in this shop. There's just like a random street, and there is so many people, just everyone's being crushed.
Nobody can move. There's people standing around on the tops of fences. Like, this is the sort of thing, I think, back in, I forget which one it was like Woodstock 94 or something. These kinds of crushes kill people.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, you get pushed up against a wall, you get pushed up against the fence, you can't breathe, you're compressed, all of a sudden you're dead. Yeah, what are you going to do about it? So that's absolutely fantastic. And then there was some other stuff as well, if we go to the next one. I think John's just added an extra link in here that we can see, where Sadiq Khan, Sadiq Khan was posting a very one-sided narrative of all, it's just the biggest party in Europe, biggest street party in Europe, the vibes are immaculate, you know, that sad, that unfortunate female police officer
just
maybe
guy next
wasn't
to
feeling
bleeding to death, being like, "Please help!"
Yeah, Sadiq Khan just there, ready to take a selfie with them. Now, give us a big smile, and Nigel Farage responding with the actual situation on the ground: police officers having to hold people back. I think, yeah, just random bursts of violence with people in the street. I think one woman gave birth there. Legit, like, what is a pregnant woman that far along doing in a situation like this? It's just irresponsible. It's ridiculous.
Lord of the Flies neighborhood. I mean, that's what it is for a day. Just, okay.
I mean, these are not even for a day, for a full weekend and possibly more. So, these are the standards that we're upholding on our capital
city.
Don't
you want this to come out of London and into the Shire?
No. No, I want, you know...
I wanted to leave London, frankly.
I wanted to leave London, but I don't see that happening anytime soon with our current political establishment. So I would rather just, like, build a wall around London.
Mm. You know, until we can figure out what the hell is going on.
No, just forever. Just like,
that's the thing, we're never going to figure out what the hell's going on with these
exactly.
people.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what, do you want to go out into this crowd and interview these people? So, no, I don't either. And then we've got some other beautiful stuff where... We've got some nice cultural enrichment going on here.
People listening, what is this? The guy...
The people, for some reason, at the top of a fence, a man and a woman, dry humping each other. And I found out there's something amusing about this that Rory directed me to. This is apparently called daggering. This is a supposed cultural import that we've got from Jamaica. And wouldn't you know that even Jamaica has banned such a practice over there? Yes, from this amusingly titled Guardian article, No Sex, Please, We're Jamaican, where they say, through an initial announcement on the 6th of February explicitly targeted daggering and daggering-related songs, the latest ban is much broader. Banished from the airwaves is any recording, live song, or music video that promotes and or glorifies the use of guns or other offensive weapons. Any recording, live song, or music video which promotes or glorifies any offense against a person, including murder, rape, mob violence, and other offenses such as arson. So, you know, over in Jamaica, they were at least trying to do something to, you know, prevent terrible behavior in the streets. And would you like to know the reason they targeted daggering in particular? It's quite funny, but you carry on.
I was just going to say, it's also nice to see, because you get this argument, oh, we must be allowed to do these sort of things because it's our culture. And the Met Police will eat that up and allow us to go on.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not. Like, literally, if you go back to the motherland here, if you want to, they're just like, no, we're not doing
it. They don't want it. It reminds me of that clip of Tony Blair with that African leader where they're talking about, oh, you're going to lift homosexuality bans, and they're just like, no, we've got traditional values here. Yeah. We don't want to do anything like that.
I mean, I remember it must be some TV show on like BBC Three ages ago I remember watching, where they would send kids to Jamaica for like an exchange program to see how the different parenting would work. And I think, if I'm correct, there was one episode where they sent some like Jamaican types from London back to Jamaica. And the Jamaican culture and the people there were just like, these people, the kids they got were basically soft degenerates.
Well, yeah, of course.
A bunch of softies, like.
The most amusing thing I've seen is see American black Twitter interact with African Twitter. African Twitter are not fans of black Americans at all.
No.
Bunch of uppities.
But it's just the cultural difference is so stark, and it's just like, yeah, no, this rampant kind of crime is not something you should tolerate.
Yeah, I'm sorry, if you're living in London and descended from Caribbean people, you're not Caribbean anymore, you're Londoners. That's what you are.
That's how you're being treated by the, well, authorities who just permit this to go on.
Yeah, and once again, the reasoning for banning daggering is absolutely hilarious. I found this very reputable website here, gave a breakdown of it. Many persons are offended by this lewd public display of affection through this dancing practice. Many argue it's unhealthy for children to be exposed to this type of behavior due to the impact of their innocent, impressionable minds. No complaints so far. I agree completely. Some find it very disturbing, conclude that it helps contribute to the moral decline in values and attitudes in the Jamaican society today. But we're happy with it going on in London. You know, who cares about our moral values and societal standards? Oh, well.
Isn't like the Socialist Party in power in Jamaica as well? It's just like, they're leftists and more based than our so-called rightists.
That's always the case in these sorts of places, though. But and then there's the health and safety of the whole thing. Doctors have had their hands full of male patients who have suffered from the after effects of engaging in this dangerous practice. Once you go daggering, there's a high possibility... Is it the Socialists?
Labour Party is in power. Anyway.
Just shows how pathetic we are over here. But once you go daggering, there's a high possibility you could end up with a broken or fractured penis or penis tissue damage, which could be permanent. Doctors have urged people to take this as a serious matter. I mean, think of your junk, men. Come on, just think of it. You don't want to go messing around down there. Female participants don't seem to be particularly affected by this dance. Males, but I would say it's in your best interest to heed the doctor's advice. Better be safe than sorry, don't you think? Yes. Yes, I agree completely. And then if we move over to Manchester Pride, because, you know, what would it be in England if the weekend was only full of one degenerate event? We've got to have multitude across the country. So this image kind of sums up Manchester Pride so well. It's from the Greater Manchester Police, saying, "It's been a really busy weekend for us, but whilst our night patrols were briefing for Pride, someone decided to smash up our police car. That's one less vehicle to respond to emergencies, not just tonight, but until it's repaired." And that's what they want. Obviously, they want less police responding to potential crimes in the middle of what is essentially a giant unregulated party in the street.
I don't see that. This is left on left action in my mind.
Obviously, because some of the...
Oh no, we won't be able to go out tonight and arrest people for posting things on Twitter. I was like,
I mean, some of the responses in the thread were pretty great. Like, there was one that was a briefing for Pride translates to rehearsing your dance moves.
That's great.
Yeah, because that is actually what the police do over in the UK.
Like, oh no, we won't be able to go out into emergencies. It's like, you don't care about emergencies. Yeah. Don't give me this twaddle.
Look, like right here, they're doing the Macarena with these guys. Like, you're not there to police behaviour or stop people from fighting. You're there to just party with the rest of them. In which case, you know, fair play, just don't pretend you're police.
I mean,
Jesus Christ.
But this is the point. Like, the reason you could scroll in this thread and just keep finding this crap is because it's so in culture.
That it's just like, so common.
It's unbelievable. How many examples we have.
Like, what's the point of even thinking that the police are going to police anymore in the UK? We know that you're a captured institution. Who cares? Yep. Hey, Macarena, you're under arrest. Moving back to that image of the police officers with the two dog enthusiasts, let's take a look at the clip from this is from Manchester Pride's actual official Twitter account, and this was one of the ways that they were advertising their Ginny Lemon dog show. This is official. This is what they want to be seen by the public. If you play this, John.
Well, hiya, Babs, it's me, Ginny Lemon, fanciest boy.
Up front and center, no hiding it.
Well, Ginny Lemon's dog show is a tradition that we're bringing back here. Madness, mayhem, unpredictability. It's been such an amazing afternoon of furry friends and human friends parading around. It's been absolutely amazing. Manchester Pride this year, as always, has just been so epic and amazing. The vibe, the buzz, it's just amazing to see so many beautiful faces and such diversity.
Yep, such diversity. This is the diversity we want on the streets.
Male and female dogs. But we've been over this a million times. Fetish pride, that's what that is. And you're not being oppressed I mean, even if we're going to put this in leftist language of like, oh, pride is still a protest against oppression of our people.
It's what
like,
oppression?
You're not being oppressed for your love of dressing up as a dog and effing in your bedroom. Like, no one cares.
But now
you bring
you're being oppressed out into the street. And, you know, when people pointed out like, hey, isn't this kind of a street event that anyone can go to, including families with their children? Their only response was, well, you know, we recommend that the second half where the human dog people come out is slightly less family friendly.
How about you don't have your fetish in public? Because that's weird.
No, because it's unacceptable behavior that is actively degrading the West's morality at this point.
But I'm also pretty sure this is like a standard in like people who do fetishes. It's just like you don't do them in public. Like that's part of the point as well. Like it's meant to be something you have privately because then otherwise it's not weird.
Also, where's the thrill?
I suppose
the transgression of doing it in public. But that just goes to show the domination. They're sort of basically lording it over us. That, nah, we can dress as dogs in public. You can't do anything. Great. And they're also sponsored by the Milk Chocolate Company. You know, once again, I pity those dogs after the recent spate of dogs showing up with monkeypox at this show. You know, and just another image I saw from this. I don't know exactly if this is from Manchester Pride
this
year.
No,
this
is an old one.
Oh, is this an old one? Yeah. Oh, fair play.
But it's just as real. And look,
but this is what happens.
This is the thing. Like, as we were scrolling through earlier, like, there are maybe, what, about 50, 70 like, iconic images like this. And that's the iconic ones. Mm. Like, the reality of things on the ground in this country is just like, this is completely normal at this point. If you wanted to describe the West to a foreigner, you'd show them stuff like this.
Like, I'm sorry, if you are one of these dog men, you should be in prison right now, because this is not appropriate behavior towards a child. If you're dressed like this in public and a child comes up and wants to know, you say no.
I love that the kid has been given a pride flag as well. Like,
kid
yes,
has no
this,
idea what's
going
on.
This is our movement. This is how we want our movement to be seen. It's like, okay, fine. I'll show every parent this image.
All right, then. And New York is much the same as well. There's been a lot of rubbish going on in New York. I mean, this is just the typical sort of stuff that you see in New York anyway, where you've got these lovely disheveled gentleman, just a
most classy man in New York over here.
Sees this woman eating her food, grabs it and runs. I assume he was homeless and high on something, but
most law-abiding New Yorker.
And this is just typical subway manners in New York. Yeah. This is what they encourage. We've also
Excuse
got
me, man. May I have a handful of rice?
We've also got what I assume is the same person in the next link doing his part to help make New York a cleaner city. As he...
Oh, no. Yeah, this is an old one. I've seen this one before.
Yep. As he defecates in the... Oh, God.
Hey, look, you gotta go. If the toilet's closed. Like...
Yeah, and then there was... I suppose so. You know, if I was that janitor, I would just quit.
Oh, no, he's clearly been sat on the floor there. He's like, I'm just gonna use this. Okay.
It's... Yep. Great. Fantastic. For those listening and not watching, there's a janitor in a New York subway just, you know, doing his job. He's got his mop and bucket, and a homeless man just decides to, you know...
Use it as a toilet.
As you do.
But I love that the guy's walking past pointed it out. There's a parallel universe where they didn't point it out. The guy finished and he carried on mopping with the same water. Oh, I love the janitor's response afterwards as well. Just hands on head like, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, what am I supposed to do? I mean, you chose to live in New York, so...
Do not call it a grave. It is the New York you chose.
And the last one, just for the in this collage that I have created here, is a more recent one, I think, where you know you've just got the diversity beating each other in the subway as usual, where nobody looks on. Nobody has
care. Left.
He just looks more fed up than anything. Oh,
I'll have to move seats again.
He's so fed up.
But it's not even. Oh God, this is going on. There's not a single ounce of surprise. It's just yeah.
Well, people are used to it. People are desensitized to it.
Is this New York? This looks like a London subway, actually.
It might be, but I mean, it just goes to show what's going on, doesn't
Universal.
It? Especially when I think a few people pointed out, you know, like you can say, "Oh, I can't believe these people stood by and didn't do anything," but you got to remember, if they did step in and try and do anything, who
there's
knows?
No reward.
Yeah, well, there's no reward. There might actually be punishment as well.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you've laid hands on a black man. That means you're a racist. Sorry, you're fired. Sorry, you're arrested.
Yeah.
So
have a hate crime.
What are you supposed to do? Yeah. What are you supposed to do? But yeah, that's just a little roundup of everything that's been going on in the West recently, and I hope it put a smile on your face.
Oh, God. Well, I suppose we'll move to Nigeria, Bing.
Are we moving to Nigeria? Will they let us in?
Well, they weren't less on the adverts, that's for sure.
And that's fine, I wasn't planning on it anyway.
So Nigeria has decided to ban white people from its adverts, and that's a good thing.
It's pretty based.
Unironically, we're going to go through this, and they've got a pretty good argument. I can't actually harm them on this one.
I've seen some people pointing it out and being like, oh, can you believe they've done this? And it was like, this is a good thing.
Oh,
I see no problem in this.
Can't believe you've done this. It's just us going, well, you know, do it again.
Yeah, why not?
We'll start off, of course, just by mentioning a premium video here, being the hangout me and Carl did on how Britain has changed. Because, of course, we're going to relate this back to Britain and the differences between us and Nigeria right now in terms of advertising. Because, of course, Britain wasn't always the way it is now, and you just have, like, video footage, which proves the point, right up until, like, the 1980s.
And London used to be full of English people. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah, video footage of London in the 1980s, and late 1980s. And it's,
sorry, it's like we're describing, we found these architectural wonders. Like,
oh, yeah.
We've gone back and done some archaeology. We've unearthed these ancient tapes of London from 1980.
I mean, but for people in, like, Trump's age, you'll think, you know, what's the big deal about? People my age, I ain't never seen a London that looks like in the tapes.
Definitely not.
It's not a thing. So it is actually, oh my God, look how the world used to be. Used to have, you know, comfy seats in McDonald's, but not anymore. But it wasn't always this way, and if we move forward, we shall see some of the media's in the West response to, well, us. Let's put it that way. Because you have Salon here, with their verified checkmark, some Yankees, turning up saying, the culinary traditions of mainland Europe's only indigenous people, being the Sami, the North, like, Finland, Russia people from God knows where. And they're the only indigenous people in all of Europe.
The only ones.
No one else.
Nope.
No.
Britain's been here for 2,000 years.
No. I mean, Anglo-Saxons, I mean, over 1,000 years here. No.
I guess
French, Italians, German tribes, going all the way back to the goddamn Romans.
I mean, this is obviously a case of cultural erasure.
Yeah,
going on right here. But, you know, it's okay because they are saying indigenous to one specific person, whereas you or I, we're not indigenous.
The only way this is actually happening, of course, because indigenous does involve pretty much every ethnic group of Europe, and, I mean, Slovenes, Swedes, Slovaks, I mean, that's just beginning with S, is there? And you can see here that it's because they're Americans. Sorry to be rude again, I know I talk about the Americans a lot, but this is leftist Americans turning up being like, oh, they look like Indians. It's like, no, that's not what indigenous means, you goddamn idiots.
Well,
like,
well,
this is why the American citizens at this point can be described as indigenous as well, because they're not of anywhere else.
Well, yeah, I mean, American intersectionals just think indigenous means brown.
Yeah, you
that's
live
all
out
they think.
Hunter-gatherer groups who haven't built cities, that's basically an Indian, so that's an indigenous person. Like, no, I mean, this is why I hate the term, what is it, like, the indigenous Americans. It's just like, that's actually them right now.
That's you guys now.
Yeah. But moving into the article itself, they say in here.
Do we have to?
The only group are the Sami, of course. Tragically, the narrative of modern Sami history mirrors that of other indigenous peoples in America and Oceania.
What, they were constantly murdering each other?
No. Although they are never the victims of a physical genocide.
Oh, no, here it comes.
Many Sami do consider themselves victims of cultural genocide. And it's like, yeah. Yeah, I wonder what that feels like. No idea. Moving
on. I
couldn't
tell you.
They say in here, they describe some of the more horrible things that obviously did happen to the Sami under the Russians and the Finnish. Similarly to indigenous peoples in the United States and Canada, Sami were forcibly sent to boarding schools and discouraged from speaking their language or participating in their religion. Racial scientists, I don't know what that means.
That sounds a little bit mid-century Germany to me.
Yeah. Would force Sami children into undress for photographs and measure different parts of their body for research. Historically nomadic, many Sami were also forced to quit reindeer herding and live in permanent settlements. It's like,
I mean, to be fair, that doesn't sound like nice stuff to happen.
No.
I'm not going to defend any of that stuff.
What's kind of funny, though, is that the Russians and the Finnish need are not bothered. I mean, like, in the modern day, we actually know how you can conduct a cultural genocide without having to do any of that. Which you just insist that there needs to be loads more people living up here and just bush in Russians or Finns en masse until the ethnic group that was there, that was indigenous, is just outbred to the point that the Sami no longer exist.
I mean, these were backwards, less progressive times, I suppose, so...
Yeah, they hadn't figured out the real way to culturally change a place, let's say. But we'll move on to the next article here, because it's not just Salon. The BBC are also guilty of this, as you can see. So, again, American logic, but it's the BBC... World Service, which is the international service, saying here, the Sami are the only indigenous people in the EU. I love how we narrowed it down to that now. So the English are indigenous now, presumably, since Brexit.
I mean, I'm glad that we've been gifted our gifted our indigenous nature back.
Yeah, they interview some girl and they write off this big long thing in the bottom there. They're like, oh, one girl's quest to save her culture. Wait, yeah. Yeah, I know. There's a lot of people in your own country doing that as well, BBC. But
Well, I mean, that's the thing. If she wants to do that, I fully support her attempts to keep hold of her cultural heritage. It'd just be nice if that sort of allowance was extended out to other people, shall we say.
A quick reminder as to what is happening in England in the next image here, as people may have missed. This is Whitechapel in Tower Hamlets.
Ironic name.
Yeah, it's a place of I've just, Jack it's the just Ripper.
Purely how ironic that is. Whitechapel.
Mm. Yeah, it's where Jack the Ripper did all his murders as well. And it's just, there you have it, culturally changing. We can no longer have the culture of Jack the Ripper. I'm joking, Londoners, but I mean, what few of you are left? But they say in here, it's just the aspects, of course, that they have their definition of indigenous, but it doesn't include what is indigenous. Well, what is indigenous? Well, obviously, indigenous means that the people are of the place. Not in the place, in the moment. That's why the British in India.
You're talking about the actual definition, whereas, once again, the intersectional definition means brown people.
Yeah. But, like, the English who went over to India were never indigenous to India.
No, they weren't.
Seemingly obvious. They were there for, what, about 350 years? They were in India, but they weren't of India. That was clear. And the subsequent is also true, meaning that you're not of anywhere else. However, moving to the next one, we now have the Nigerian story, which is actually along the same logic. And this is why I think it's kind of based. Because the Nigerians have all sat around going, yeah, everyone on our TV shows doesn't look like us. Like, none of them are Nigerian.
Wouldn't know that feeling.
They're not indigenous to Nigeria. Maybe we should do something about that. So they just decided to ban all foreigners. And of course, the number of white Nigerians is, I think, closer to zero than any other number.
It's somewhat small. Somewhat small.
Yeah, probably not probably closer to zero than 1 million, that's for sure. And so banning foreigners effectively banned white people. And as you can see from the headline here, saying ban foreign models, but became the place that white models and voiceovers have all been banned as well.
I mean, you know what? I'm not going to shed a tear over this. My, you know, my modeling career in Nigeria wasn't taking off anyway, so.
I could have made some calls, man.
damn, too late now.
They say in here, white models and voiceovers in British accents were once ubiquitous in Nigerian adverts, not anymore. As part of a policy of developing local talent, the country's advertising regulator has announced a complete ban on the use of foreign models and voiceover artists from October. The ban would cover all non-Nigerians and will put paid to the number of Western white actors who have appeared regularly on the country's television adverts. Even before the ban was announced, companies had to pay 100,000 naira, about 240 buckaroos, tariff for every foreign model used in an advert, making Nigeria one of the world's most uncompromising environments on media representation.
So they charged you for having non-Nigerians in your adverts?
Yeah.
And people still did it anyway. Why? That's really weird to me. Just get a Nigerian.
Probably because it's sold better. Let's be frank. But that's the thing. It's like, well, that's all good and proper, you might think, in just pure making money terms. But then again, like, when the Nigerian government represents the Nigerian people, like, we actually want things better off for them here instead of international corporations.
That'd be nice. I mean, like you say, it's nice to see a country that's standing up for its own people over foreigners.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there is many advertising agency in this country that would argue, well, no, we need all this ethnic minority representation because it raises sales. And it's like, yeah, but it also gives the impression that, like, one third of Britain is black. It's not.
And Carl's looked into it before, like, especially in America, people are so completely out of touch with the actual way their country looks.
But even in, like, our cities, like, there were polls done of people in Birmingham about how black they thought the country was. And the respondents were like, yeah, about 50% black.
No, I saw... Like,
have you ever left Birmingham?
Like... I saw a thread where it was like talking about, oh, what's the stupidest thing that you believed when you were younger? And it was loads of foreigners from Birmingham saying, I grew up thinking that England was a majority brown country. It warps people's reality.
There you have it. The guy in here, the president of the Association for Advertising Agencies of Nigeria, told The Times, quote, 10 to 20 years ago, if you checked the commercials, I would say they're about 50-50 in terms of foreign faces, and all the voiceovers were in British accents. Nigerian brands would use foreigners, whilst multinationals such as Coca-Cola and LG would simply distribute their global campaigns, full of white models, in Nigeria. Indicating a shift in strategy by international brands, the British agency sorry, AMVBBDO. Oh, that's a terrible acronym.
Who knows?
Recently shot Guinness's new African campaign. Quote, black shines brightest in Lagos using a Nigerian director and local models. Which also tells you another thing, which is, yeah, companies do not give a crap about racial nationalism when it's just du jour. Like, once it's fine again, they will completely do it. There's nothing stopping them.
Something funny related to that. Did you ever play the Spider-Man PlayStation 4 game from a few years ago?
I never got around to it.
Well, they did a remaster of it for the PlayStation 5 recently, where one of the updates they did was the city's now full of racial pride flags because, you know, Sony and Insomniac, the company, needed to show that they're on side. And it is sickening, yes. And Steam banned a mod that took all the racial pride flags out and just replaced them with the flags that used to be there. And it was the simplest mod in the world. Do you know why? They just got access to the Arabic coding. Because they released versions of it in the Middle East where they didn't have all the flags everywhere.
Oh, right. Yeah. So the mod wasn't even new. They just copy-pasted the Arabic version.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Everything else was the exact same. I think, in fact, the coding was on the disc.
That's hilarious. That's evil genius from whoever did it as well.
I know. I say Steam, although I think it might have also come out on PC because Sony started to, you know, release stuff on PC recently as well.
Yeah, but that's still hilarious. So the president says here, quote, I think the law just catching up with national sentiment. As long as maybe 8 years ago, you would notice some kind of renaissance in Nigeria. I love how this is how they phrase it. I mean, this is not how it would be phrased in Britain, of course.
It'd be an uprising of white supremacy or something if we did something over here.
But it is actually how we should describe the response we get from the English once they are actually unionized and fighting for their own, you know, actual representation. It is a renaissance, as the Nigerians have described themselves. He said that there was a new sense of pride emerging amongst young Nigerians, which meant that there was a backlash when projects were obviously shot abroad or with foreign models. Nigerian pride. Fine by
this,
me.
Yeah, this is absolutely fine.
Yeah, this is all great.
That actually made me smile when I heard that there was, you know, young Nigerians actually being proud of who they are because all of a sudden their country is starting to represent them as they are.
Yeah, kind of want to go over there and be like, can you teach me your tricks? Like, how do we run this?
Yeah.
Because we need to do the same. And he says in here, people will tell you there's about 200 millions of us. Are you really telling me you could not find an indigenous model in this commercial?
It's fair.
Love it. But I love the language. Indigenous model. I was like, yeah, an actual Nigerian. I was like, okay, that's all good. And that's why I support this move. Because I think it's, you know, the right thing to do globally as well. Because let's move back to the West in a minute. As you can see here, the Western response from one individual here with his pride flag. Nigeria has banned models and voiceover artists that aren't Nigerian, but the Times made it about white models because it's a fascist rag. Like, no, the number of Nigerians who are white. Come on, take a guess.
That just goes to show the difference that we get in attitude, is that we're just there like, oh yeah. I mean, they're indigenous, that's absolutely fine. All these people...
He didn't have a problem with that.
Yeah, no.
He had a problem with the framing.
Yeah, he had a problem with the framing and talking about white people.
Yeah, because if you go forward, we can see, obviously, just the data on Nigeria. So you can go next one, please, John. And you can see here, just here's a list of ethnic groups. The white Nigerians didn't come up anywhere there, I can see. I mean, maybe they're somewhere in the other category, but they're probably such a minority that doesn't even register.
They might be in other.
That's what I mean. And if you go to the next one here, we can just check out how the UK also does exactly the same thing by banning white models. Just, you know, not to the extent the Nigerians have. It's because here's Channel 4 Insights. Thank you, Channel 4. I couldn't find this data very easily. They'd actually done their own research into representation of different racial groups. And they had it all. Like, before BLM, after BLM, the lot. And,
oh, really? Nice comprehensive for us.
Yeah, of course, their perception is that, look at the numbers, blacks make up 3% of the UK population, but 37% of TV ads feature black people.
This is something we're proud of, yep. Over at Channel 4?
Not quite. They're actually upset that it's not high enough. As you can see here. It's like...
they're literally 10 times more represented than they should be.
Yeah, they list this. Representation of different ethnicities has remained flat, despite a perceived increase following the BLM movement and racism education. It's like...
we won't stop until it's 100% black people.
So in 2019, it was 37%. And then in 2022, it's 37%. And the actual population is 3%, and you're upset because it's not increased enough. To what percentage exactly do you wish? 100. That is what it's always going to be.
Oh, yeah. It's looking for complete and total domination.
Yeah. And, of course, it's not just people with black skin who are overly represented mass here. They have, of course, the South Asian people, 7% of the population, 15% of the ads, and East Asian people being 1% of the population, 8% of the ads, as they list. And, again, they're widening that that isn't higher again as well. I mean, presumably, it should just be 100% for all groups except white. Just every advert should just
have
no white people.
That's the goal. You can't. You won't have a proud population. As we saw in Nigeria, you know, it made them proud to be Nigerian. Don't want people being proud to be English, or else we might not be able to get globalist agendas through the door.
There's the distinction as well, because, of course, this is just on racial lines. Like, when you think about the percentage of white people on TV adverts, who gives a crap if they're not English, or Scottish, or Welsh, or Northern Irish? Because that's our country, the United Kingdom. If there are loads of white Germans on English TV...
That'd be like, weird.
Again, it would not actually speak to the point, which is the indigenous representation matters. Would have thought.
I mean, that's the thing with Nigeria. They've not just said all white people banned from... non-Nigerians.
Like, if you get a lot of South Africans on Nigerian TV, they're going to be like, what the hell is this? So, there you have it again. If you scroll through this, there's just some other statistics in here that Channel 4 listed, which, again, just is beautiful, to say the least. If you look at the replies, you should be able to see them, please, John. Because the other statistics are also interesting. You might have to reload this if it's not loaded right, because there is more slides here to show. And
there we go.
So here you have it. So this is tokenism on the rise, as they label it.
Yes, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, they say here 43% of adverts feature LGBTQ, except it's down from 46% in 2019, so that's a bad thing.
Well, interestingly, I went to university with a bunch of people who I think now work for Channel 4. And are probably the ones like making these kinds of slides, and they're thrilled. I can guarantee you, they will be absolutely thrilled about improving representation and such.
Yeah, this is leading roles in ads as well. Just to point that point. So 43% of leading roles in ads are played by Alphabet folks. Even though what's the percentage? Like, I think it's like 3 to 5 in the UK of people
who would fit
that category. Like. It's just.
I suppose they're all in Manchester, so.
You know, if you thought there was a massive overrepresentation, you were definitely right. And if you go to the last one here, you can just see them whining again. The last image, if you scroll down, please, John. Then you can see them whining about the BLM movement has not bumped it up enough. As you see, it was 36% before BLM.
Oh, no, it's only been a 2% increase, so.
Yeah.
Heartbroken.
And then they have montage ads, which is the funniest one. So, a montage, you know, they're just like.
Yeah, I know going a montage.
Between, all right, yeah. Just so I'm saying that right. But you can see here, 36% of people in montages were white people. You have it.
So they're actively bragging about underrepresenting the indigenous people of this country.
Like, white people were featured 36% of the time, of course, of like one of many other people in the montage. And of those are white, not even English. So the percentage of English people may be closer to 0 than 50%. Well, it is definitely closer to 0.
Much more likely, yes.
Yeah. And just to remind everyone as well that being white is not an advantage in the West. It is an active disadvantage. Because if we go to the next link here, we can see a new story. Pfizer, that wonderful company, has set up a fellowship that bars white people from even applying.
Okay, fair play. Nice mask off moment right there. Just like, no, yeah, we're not hiring white people. Screw you.
Literally? Pfizer is offering a fellowship exclusively to students of Black, Latino, and Native American descent. Which would include the Americans, if you were using that term correctly, but whatever. They say in here, quote, "This Pfizer program is so fragrantly illegal, I seriously wonder how it passed international review by its general counsel," said attorney Adam Moore Tara.
It's because affirmative action was never meant to help white people.
Yeah, it's actively there too.
It was meant to screw us over.
Yeah.
It's the second constitution of the United States and the one they care about far more than the original.
Another individual attorney here, Harriet, said the fellowship program represents a clear case of liability. Quote, "Major corporations seem to have forgotten there's such a thing as called the law. And they seem to think that as long as they're woke, they're bulletproof." And presumably those two attorneys are suing. If you're not, go for it. There's a gold mine in front of you of money to be made. And, well, that's just in the United States, because in the UK, getting back to us, you could always just change the law to make it legal, such as this. We featured it many a time, but I don't think it should be forgotten just how down the rabbit hole we are. I mean, you've got Nigeria over here banning non-Indigenous models for Indigenous representation.
Very based.
And you've got the UK actively running government jobs that just the locals can't even apply for. This is the Summer Diversity Internship Program, which, if you scroll down, has the diversity requirements that you've got to be brown, bro. Which, there you have it. You must meet ethnic minority, social, or economically disadvantaged status. So there we are. So Barack Obama's kids could get in, but an average Englishman couldn't.
You know, like some poor kid living in what's essentially a slum in Liverpool or something, for instance. No, you're far too privileged.
But if you go to the last one here, of course, there is also MI5 doing that, just to make the point even more stark, which is just, yeah, every government institution.
Let's not... Why don't we just fill the MI5 with foreign agents? Genius idea. Oh, brilliant. I don't see this being...
You want to scroll down on this. If you want to find it, John, with it, it's the summer diversity internship yet again. Should be there. There you have it. That's the one with the diversity requirements. You ever wonder why our Secret Service doesn't seem to work anymore? I have no idea either. Who knows? Anyway.
Complete mystery.
Nigeria banning non-Indigenous people from their adverts. And I'd salute. Why not?
Very based. Lead the way, Nigeria.
Nigeria forever!
Isn't David Badenoch Nigerian as well?
Yeah.
Oh, we missed out. We missed out. All right then. So, Rishi Sunak, the potential new leader of the country in a few weeks, has decided to do a tell-all interview with The Spectator on lockdowns, their harmful effects, what was going on behind the scenes. And it's all very interesting, but most of all, I think the message that we need to take away from this is that Rishi Sunak is a true British hero who was fighting behind the scenes the whole time for our personal liberties. Or at least that's the impression that I get from the interview anyway. Certainly the impression that Rishi Sunak wants to give off. Before I go further, we've got this recent book club that Carl did with Alexander Adams on his own book called Artivism, and I've not watched this video yet, but I've taken a quick flip through the book in the office, and it seems really interesting. He's talking about how political activists like Banksy use their art as a way of conveying particular messages, and one of the most effective ways of convincing somebody of something is to entertain them into it using art. You know, it's very difficult to reason somebody out of a position they were entertained into. I forget who said that on Twitter recently, but I read it and I thought it was a very good line, so I'm sorry I'm not crediting that to someone.
I'm going to credit it to Radlib just because he's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy. I don't think it was him, though. Sorry, Radlib. but no, so it's very, very interesting and you should all check that out. Anyway, moving on. So we've got this article, The Lockdown Files, Rishi Sunak, on what we weren't told, but we all knew. People like us were warning about this for years while it was all going on. But now we know. Now we know for certain. And to be fair, it's interesting to get a look into what actually was going on behind the scenes, as far as you want to believe Rishi on what he's saying here.
Suddenly it became politically convenient to point out that this was a terrible idea, and then he's like, I was on that side the whole time.
Yeah, of course what he's doing, is part of his campaign for the leadership. He's trying to appeal to the right wing of the party and the voter base who...
You mean the party? Because like the actual Conservative Party members are all like our guys.
Well, yeah, that's true.
From when you meet them, but the people, the MPs, are just...
They're useless. They are absolutely useless. And despite trying to make himself seem like the good guy in this article, Rishi just makes himself seem completely useless. I was fighting behind the scenes the whole time. I was trying to fight for your freedoms. Yeah, and you didn't work, did you? It didn't work. You didn't. We still got locked down for over a year. And anyway, I'll just start off with some of the stuff. So here, Sunak's story starts with the very first COVID meeting where ministers were shown an A3 poster from scientific advisors explaining the options. I wish I'd kept it because it listed things that had no impact, banning live events and all that. It was saying you should be careful not to do this stuff too early because being able to sustain it is very hard in a modern society. So the scientific advice was initially to reject or at least delay lockdown. And to be honest, we should have rejected lockdown from the very beginning, which it seems like we did, and then just kept it at that. No lockdown. Not going to do anything. The scientific advice says no, it's not going to do anything. And beyond the scientific advice, it's immoral to force people to stay in their own homes and encourage them to clap like seals every Thursday for the brave men and women of our NHS.
I met a doctor at the conference on the weekend and he was telling me just like everyone thinks that was cringe. Like everyone in his place of work were just like, yeah, I don't want that.
Yeah, I've met a few people who work in the NHS and I've not heard any of them say anything good about the clapping. But this all changed when the Fire Nation attacked. No. When Neil Ferguson and his team at the Imperial College published their famous Report 9, which argued that COVID casualties could hit 500,000 if no action was taken. didn't really live up to the hype, did it? I don't know why we keep referring to Neil Ferguson other than him being so incompetent that he just keeps accidentally giving the government reasons to be authoritarian.
Let's check what the COVID deaths actually were.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Because
there's just him being like, yeah, it'll be 20,000 if we lock down the entire country. It's like, eh.
Yeah, Neil Ferguson, by the way, for those who don't know, is one of the health advisors who a few years ago, well, I think 15, 20 years ago, spoke about the dangers of mad cow disease, and it ended up in killing a load of cattle unnecessarily. So every single time this man does anything, just assume that he's wrong. But the government goes, ah, you're giving us an excuse to be authoritarian? Fantastic, we'll go along with it. What were the numbers?
So the official figures are 200,000 deaths, but of course that was with COVID, not from COVID, which is a whole other conversation to be had.
Yes.
But then he's just like, yeah, trust me, if we lock down, it'll be 20K. And if we don't, it'll be 500K. And I was like,
so you're wrong both times?
Yeah, I mean, in both ways. You weren't just like slightly wrong, you're wildly wrong.
You're well off, but we still keep listening to him. That, of course, turned out to be a vast exaggeration of lockdown's ability to curb COVID deaths. Imperial stressed it did not consider the wider social and economic costs of suppression, which will be high. So they say, oh yeah, yeah, we know this could screw over the whole country, but we just didn't care. We didn't consider it.
I love that level of analysis, though. It's just like, how bad will it be for the economy? Yeah, bigly.
Very big. Much bigly.
It's like, you don't actually have any idea, do you?
Mm-hmm. Sunak says, I wasn't allowed to talk about the trade-off. Ministers were briefed by Number 10 on how to handle questions about the side effects of lockdown, and he says the script was not to ever acknowledge them. The script was, oh, there's no trade-off, because doing this is for our health, is good for the economy.
Then you resign, because this is obviously madness.
We'll get on to that. I felt like no one talked.
Hang on, just for a second. Let's put you in that position, right? And let's say you're a complete bug man, and you're just trying to get political power. And you think, okay, this is an event that's going to happen. Clearly, this is the wrong side of it. So I resign now, and in 5 years, when everyone realizes it's the wrong thing, they put me in power because, you know, I can say, look, I was on the right side. And instead of that, you know, like Boris Johnson did when he resigned against Theresa May, and instead you stayed on. So number one, I just don't believe him off the bat.
Oh, of course.
Because Rishi is definitely a bug man that just wants power.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, our government is run by, you know, the foxes, the fox class, and you expect foxes to be somewhat cunning, except all of our foxes have been fed gruel and have brain parasites and have no amount of cunning, so they're all just retarded and stumbling around, defecating on themselves constantly.
It's nice to know you have a high opinion of the ruling class.
I really do, yes. I felt like no one talked. We didn't talk at all about the missed doctor's appointments or the backlog building in the NHS in a massive way. That was never part of it. When he did try to raise concerns, he met a brick wall. Those meetings were literally me around the table, just fighting. It was incredibly uncomfortable every single time. I want to imagine, right, little diddy manlet Rishi Sunak reaching across.
But what about the Magna Carta? And everyone else in the room was like, no, evil. You were there.
This is
him.
For the greater good, Rishi, the greater good.
Rishi was totally there in his King Arthur outfit.
Rishi jumps across the desk and grabs Boris Johnson. You need to listen before it's too late, Boris. You don't understand what you're doing to
just
this country.
Starts painting the English flag over his face. I was always for English principles and law and whatever, you people, just vote for me.
The rule of law, Boris. Remember.
Oh, God. he's trying.
Someone needs to make that edit. Someone really needs to
a dramatic reading of how Rishi thinks history will remember him.
Yeah, I was very emotional about it. I was like, forget about the economy. Surely we could at least agree that kids not being in schools is a nightmare. Or something like that. It was a big silence afterwards. It was the first time someone had said, ah, yes, I was Spartacus. No, you need to understand, I'm Spartacus. And no one else joined.
I just didn't tweet it at any point. I didn't like leak anything to try and help the cause of stopping this. I didn't even have any private conversations that people can recall and then say that, oh yeah, he was totally on our side, bro. But trust me, I was totally on your side, bro.
I mean, the funny thing is that if you go back to around the sorts of time that he's talking about, there are articles like this one from, I think it's Yahoo talking about an article from The Sun, where if you go to the next link, yeah, he's warning of the economic and social impact of lockdown. So it seems like he may have, you know...
In what context?
Yeah, yeah.
Because remember, he was the Chancellor. Like, it was his job to be like, yeah, economy might go bad.
Yeah, the only quotes that I've got is, Having a difficult economy has an impact on both our ability to fund public services like the NHS, so it's all in service of our glorious NHS, but also on individual people's long-term health outcomes. Because, I mean, anybody could have told you that locking people up indoors for a year probably won't be good for their health.
Yeah, if we don't treat the cancer patients, they might die.
Yeah.
Oh, really? There's a brain blast there.
Yeah, but and then he was talking about his dissatisfaction with 10 p.m. curfews on pubs and restaurants and said, oh, it's frustrating.
I remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. It's so
just
stupid.
Like hearing it, it's so stupid.
Yep. Of course it's frustrating, it's difficult, and I wish we didn't have to do these things.
You didn't!
You didn't, Rishi. But now, if we return back to glorious champion King Rishi Sunak of the modern day era and the Spectator, Rishi freedom fighter Sunak paints a very different picture. In every brief, we tried to say, let's stop the fear narrative. It was always wrong from the beginning. I was constantly saying it was wrong. I was just always right about everything. Everybody else was just against me. That's right. Vote for me, everybody. I care about your liberties. The posters showing COVID patients on ventilators, he said, were the worst. Oh, it's the worst. It's wrong to scare people like that. The closest he came to defying was in September 2020 when he said that it was time to learn to live without fear, a direct response to the cabinet officer's messaging. They were all very upset about that. That's right. I was just, every single time I was going in, I was throwing punches left, right and centre. Oh, you need to think about the people, Boris. Yeah,
this totally isn't because I'm losing in the polls against Liz Truss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and number 10 wanted to present it as if it was following the science rather than a political decision. And this had implications for the wiring of government decision-making. It meant elevating sage. And this is where it does get to some interesting stuff that's less... Well, it's still self-serving, but it's still interesting that you just get it straight from the horse's mouth that, yes, we gave to way too much power to sage. And we... Yes.
So just someone in the chat is like, everyone from the NHS, everything to the NHS, nothing but the NHS.
Pretty much. But yeah, they talk about how Sage was elevated. It became a sprawling group of scientific advisors into a committee that had the power to decide whether the country would lock down or not. There was no socioeconomic equivalent to Sage, no forum where other questions would be asked. And I wonder if people were warning that this could happen if you empower Sage so much. That maybe if you just say, oh, we need to listen to the experts and then don't question anything they say, that bad things could happen, we don't get the right answer. I wonder if people were saying this. Moving on, though. So whoever made the minutes for SAGE meetings, condensing its discussions into guidance for government, would set the policy for the nation. No one, not even cabinet members, would know how these decisions were reached. But in the early days, Sunak had an advantage. The SAGE people didn't realise for a very long time there was a Treasury person on all of their calls. A lovely lady. She was great because it meant she was sitting there listening to their discussions. That's right, there was some subterfuge going on and behind the scenes, Callum. Rishi knew what was really going on. He knew the lies that were being spun and went along with them all anyway. It meant that he was alerted early to the fact that those all-important minutes of SAGE meetings often edited out dissenting voices. His mole, he says, would tell him, well, actually, it turns out that lots of people disagreed with that particular conclusion, or here are the reasons that they're not sure about. So at least I'll be able to go into these meetings better on. So at least that does seem interesting. It's not too surprising. But yeah, there were people who had a particular agenda in SAGE who didn't listen to any of the dissenting voices from some of the other experts and manipulated the minutes of the meeting and government guidance to get their way. Probably yeah. People like the communists that people were pointing out were in SAGE from the beginning.
I was about to say, like, some people. It was like, we have her name, Susan Michie.
I forgot her name, but thank you for reminding me. Yeah, so people like Susan Michie, absolutely in control of SAGE, even if they had people who probably weren't entirely on board with everything. But commie's gonna commie. Typically, he said, the ministers would be shown SAGE analysis pointing to horrifying scenarios that would come to pass if Britain did not impose or extend lockdown. But even he as chancellor...
may become a totalitarian state.
I know. Even he as chancellor could not find out how these all-important scenarios had been calculated. I was like, summarise for me the key assumptions on one page with a bunch of sensitivities and rationale for each one. Once again, I find it interesting that even despite the fact he's trying to paint himself as this grand hero of British liberties, he's not ever at any point even talking about just the morality of locking people down. He's looking at it purely utilitarian, economic, loss profit position where he's just sort of like, oh, we need to look at the costs versus the benefits. And it's like, yeah, no, maybe we should think about the morality of it. Maybe we should think about respecting people enough to be able to make their own decisions without government fiat choice. But, you know, that doesn't calculate into any of this. And this is why our ruling elite establishment is garbage. Normally, cabinet members were not kept in the loop as the decisions were being made. Johnson's number 10 informed them after the event rather than consulting them. Sunak says he urged the PM to pass the decision to cabinet so his colleagues could not give him could give him political cover for rejecting the advice of Sage. I remember telling him, have the cabinet meeting. You'll see. Everyone will be completely behind you. You don't have to worry. I'll be standing next to you, as will every other member of the cabinet, bar probably Michael Gove and Sajid Javid. And, you know, he's banking on the fact that we all hate Michael Gove and Sajid Javid. And, you know, like, fair play, Rishi. I see what you're doing right there, you slimy dog, you. But you can't... You can't just try and pin the blame on everybody else as you've been doing. And once again, he's just... I picture Rishi as like a worm tongue character. You know, like... You know, worm tongue from Lord of the Rings. You know, he's like scrovelling, he's whispering in Boris's ear the whole time. Whereas he's trying to make himself out to be the Gandalf the White, bursting in, trying to unleash the truth of the scenario, of the whole situation. It's ridiculous. Any point Sunak... Even the Spectator call him out on this, and they say even at any point he could have gone public with all of this, or even resigned. I ask him if he should have done. To quit that way in that way during a pandemic, he says, would have been irresponsible. It would have been irresponsible, Callum. Big deal!
To who?
Big deal. It would have been irresponsible in the short term for his political career.
Yeah, like, I want actually why. Does he not even explain? Does he just say, oh, it's irresponsible, and then moves on?
That's what it says in this article. That's the most we've got. So, And to go public or let his misgivings become known would have been seen as a direct attack on the PM. So, you know, he only waited...
Yep. If the PM is doing an evil policy that's this big, it's time to resign, and he didn't.
But he didn't want to attack the PM when it was lockdowns or anything like that. But when it came out that Boris had maybe let Pincher live up to his name.
Well, this I won't stand for.
Yeah, this is just a bridge too far, my friend. I'm
a member of the Westminster community, so it actually affects me instead of the entire country.
Only now can Sunak speak freely. His chains have been removed from him. His persecution is over. He is opening up not just because he's running to be Prime Minister, he says. No, I swear, guys, like, please come back. You know, it's not just because I'm trying to, you know, get political points here, but because there are important lessons in all of this. Not who did what wrong. Interesting that he just wants to discount that immediately. It's not, guys, it's not about who made what decisions and who locked down who.
Government isn't about people making decisions. Government is about just getting more power.
But how it came to pass that such important questions about lockdown's profound knock-on effects were never properly explored. And that seems to be a bit contradictory, because surely it's on the people in the government to ask these questions and explore these possibilities, but at the same time, you know, they didn't do anything wrong. They may have done some things wrong, guys, but we just got to forgive them. Just got to let it slide, bro. The leader matters. It matters who the person at the top is, he says. Ministers need to be honest about the flip side of any policy, including tax cuts, and that denial always makes things worse. Like the way that Rishi himself has never addressed his own role in the rampant inflation we're experiencing by printing loads of money. But that has nothing to do with any of the problems we're facing now. And the other reasons of lockdown...
This is probably the best part of his campaign. Like, I know this is a side thing, but just like, I was the guy in charge of the economy. The economy is in such a state that I should be Prime Minister. It's a one
genius
line of logic.
Genius. And the way that we get ourselves out of this cost of living crisis, more taxes. I need to charge you more for the money that you already own. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. We shouldn't have empowered scientists in the way that we did, he says. And you have to acknowledge trade-offs from the beginning. If we'd done all of that, we could be in a different place. We'd probably have made different decisions on things like schools. Could a more frank decision have helped Britain avoid lockdown entirely as Sweden did? I don't know, he says. But it could have been shorter, different, quicker. Even now, Sunak doesn't argue that lockdown was a mistake. And I think that's really all you need to know about this whole interview, is that despite the fact that he's trying to expose the government for what they are, he's not saying lockdown was a mistake. He's not looking at it from a moral angle. He's not even looking at it from a conservative angle. He's looking at it from a pure lost profit angle. And also, he's trying to paint himself as Captain Rishi, the grand hero, is Spartacus of the Conservative cabinet. It's a complete joke. And he says at the end, it was the problem at the heart of the COVID response, a lack of candor. It's just that we weren't open enough, Callum. It's not that we locked you down for a year and gaslit you. It's just we weren't honest enough. And interestingly enough, not surprisingly, Liz Truss has decided to follow suit immediately after and says that immediately after this interview comes out, she goes, well, actually, it wasn't just Rishi behind the scenes arguing against this. I was also trying to kick up a storm about it as well. She told an audience of Tory party members that she believed ministers did too much during the health crisis. Speaking at the penultimate leadership contest hustling, she argued, on reflection, that the measures had been draconian and that she would never impose a lockdown as prime minister. You know, I'm beginning to feel like we can't trust these politicians.
Yeah, Karen. We don't have this kind of access, but if there are any Westminster journalists watching and go and interview MPs, ask every single one of the ministers in the room when that decision was made if they support it. And if you get literally every single one of them, as they will, now saying they didn't support it.
There might be something up.
Even Boris Johnson's like, I wasn't for that. It's like literally you and everyone else in the room are the only ones who voted on it.
And then The Guardian came out with an article trying to refute everything he was saying. It was written by a scientist called Ian Boyd, and I'll translate the article into English for you. Wow, wow, government didn't listen enough to us. That's the whole thing. And I respond to that saying, they shouldn't have to rely on your advice, and I prefer if government never listened to scientists or experts again after the lockdowns. And also, they did listen to scientists, and it didn't help at all. So great. And to show that it didn't help at all, I know we already pointed out that, you know, Neil Ferguson's projections were far off the mark on both sides. Interestingly enough, earlier this year, John Hopkins did a study finding that the lockdowns were ill-founded and did more harm than good. Lockdowns in the Europe and the US reduced COVID-19 deaths by 0.2%.
That's the best possible estimate, I believe.
Yes, that's the best possible estimate. Shelter-in-place orders ineffective, reducing COVID mortality by 2.9% at most. And they conclude just by saying, we found that no evidence that lockdowns, school closures, border closures, and limiting gatherings had a noticeable effect on COVID-19 mortality. The study concluded that lockdowns are ill-founded and should be rejected as a pandemic policy instrument.
It's about 4,000 deaths with COVID, again, not from COVID, saved. In response, we destroy the entire economy and all the deaths therein that are caused by it, which are at the moment still incalculable.
And who knows how many people might die this winter of cold because they can't afford the heating bill.
Like, we already have the number of deaths that are excess. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's definitely more than 5,000. Thanks.
So, yeah, don't listen to Rishi, obviously blowing his own trumpet here.
You know, it is good to know, forevermore, if a government ever suggests lockdown policy ever again in all of human history, like, you just know they're being evil.
Well, yeah.
There's absolutely no science on their side.
Don't let yourself forget that this is what they did to you.
With that, we'll move to the video comments.
A form of money lending that doesn't include a jubilee clause, or an agreement that if the money's not paid back within a certain amount of time, then the debt will be forgiven.
I could not disagree with this more. The person taking the loan decides which degree they will undertake. If that degree isn't able to pay for itself, then that was the poor decision-making of the person taking the loan. Why should someone else be responsible for your poor decision-making, whether that be in the short term or the long?
That can be true, but two things can also be true, which is it's also the poor decision of the loan company to set those terms. Like, if they're not going to get their money back, then don't give the loan to someone. Well, like, you're going to end up losing money there. But there probably should be a punishment for that.
Let's be fair as well, that in the modern world, certainly for me, and it was probably for you as well, you get told from basically as young as you're able to understand, you need to go to university. You need to go to university.
You will get more money by going to university.
You'll get more money by going to university. You need to do it so that you can get a career so that you're not just working your 9-to-5 behind a counter all day. Or even worse than that, you know? So there is an element where people are basically being tricked into going to university just for the sake of it because they feel like they need to or else life will screw them over. And it turns out they get screwed either way, so...
Hey, I mean, about the United States, I mean, again, it's sort of their problem to fix at this point. I don't know enough about the American system. But then the British system, for sure, there is one easy fix we can do to make the system actually work.
Abolish the universities?
Well, you know, at the moment, like, I'm not actually that upset with the financing way it works. Like, it's only a barrier to people who don't understand basic mathematics and think that this is somehow the same as the American system. because they're like, oh my god, debt exists. Like, yeah. But the tuition should not be the same for every subject, because it's demonstrable that some are just actually worthwhile. And the ones that are actually worthwhile should frankly almost be free.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're training up to be a doctor, obviously university education, you need that.
Instead of importing foreigners to do all of those things, whereas the things that are completely useless, it's just like, right, you should not get zero government money. I mean, the grievance studies should literally get nothing, nada. I mean, they shouldn't even probably get a building on campus. Just have some hut out back where you can go out, and that's paid for by the person running the class.
Just a little shack.
Yeah. I want
toilet in the corner.
I want her little pearls and gender queer clothing as she stands around and Cletus in the shack with her, being the only person stupid enough to take that course.
So. And that's only because he filled out the form wrong.
Yeah. that's how the universities need to be approved. Let's go to the next one.
Hey guys, so just saw your episode from yesterday talking about the diverse workforces being more profitable, and the problem with that assessment is it's profitable companies that can afford to become diverse. So they become profitable and then they get divorced. So we had this issue in my master's program. We talked about it. And at the end of the day, the only benefit to being diverse is not getting sued.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. I hadn't actually read the data that way, but you're so right. Because it's like, oh, look at this correlation. It's like, that's not how that works. There's a deeper meaning going on there. I thought he was going to start talking about India and his interactions there, because he didn't have the greatest of times.
Oh, did he not? I've not spoken to him about India.
He came over when we met up, and he was out there. I won't say too much, because I don't know what he's allowed to say. But he was over there for work, and just like, they just were rude for no goddamn reason. And he was like, well, I'm not giving you a cheap price.
Oh, it was hilarious. I found out the other day, one of my friends from back home, I was actually quite shocked to find this out, it was either Nigeria or Ghana for half a year to do like a humanitarian charity work. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I didn't expect that from you. And she just spoke the whole time about how shocked she was that everyone was really racist to her for being white. And I was like, yeah, pretty based. And also she was shocked because the people living next to her were, one, living in a house made of mud and poo, which I was like, well, yes, it is Africa. And also had a slave.
House price.
And also had a slave, and she was so shocked that slavery still exists in the world out there. I thought we'd all just ended all the slavery in the world. It's like, yeah, we tried to, but you know, slavers gonna slave, bro.
A European world,
and happily, she managed to give the girl who was being held slave like a mobile phone, and she was able to get in touch with family and managed to get out of there. So that was good. But no, it's funny how people over here just don't understand what it's like.
I'm thinking as the chat was mentioning, like, it's all the rich companies that have the diversity, and therefore there's that correlation but not causation. I mean, I love do the same study with like water fountains in the lobby of company buildings. Just like all the companies that are profitable have water fountains in their lobbies.
Well, no, just to be more on topic, it'd be like saying Disney is Disney because of diversity. It's like,
sure, but
they had like 100 years of success first.
But it's just about the fact that if you're profitable, you can afford luxuries.
Of course.
And having
diverse staff are luxury expenses.
It is. It's a diversity hire. And a diversity hire is something that doesn't make money.
Well, it's like a fashion accessory, isn't it?
100%. And that's why I said the water fountains. Like, we've got the biggest water fountain in our law firm, and it's like, oh, they must do well. They have a big water fountain.
Oh, yeah, we've got gold-plated water fountains. Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, that is a meme from South Park. I mean, I'm sure you remember the episode where they set up their own law firm, and then they...
I don't think I've seen that episode, actually.
Okay, Cartman sets one up, and they're just like, oh, look at the water fountain. Yeah, we must be good at law. Yeah. I think it's agency work, actually, if I'm correct. But then, you know, the real version of that today would be like, look at all the diverse staff. Yeah, must be doing well.
Yeah. If
we can afford this.
We can afford this many black people. Imagine what else we can afford, eh?
But that's the point. It's because it's not because they're black either. It's because you are hiring them no longer on the basis of merit, but instead on the basis of race. And therefore, you can afford to take that hit in performance.
Well, yeah, of course.
Which is you showing off. I mean, that's you flexing on the competition.
I mean, that's the thing, is that these diverse people they're hiring, you know, if it was a normal hiring process, they may have been able to get in on their merit anyway. But that's the thing. You're just rolling the dice.
Like we know these companies don't do that.
Yeah.
We know they're not just, oh, there's no discrimination here.
I mean, even the RAF isn't doing that anymore, sadly.
There we have it. So, yeah, that's a new beautiful way of looking at it, actually. It's like, oh, we have a very diverse workforce. Oh, you must be rich.
Oh, no, it's going to the plantation house, isn't
it? That's what it is.
Yeah, it
100%.
Is.
I mean, like, why do these companies, like, they're not hiring on merit. They're literally hiring because they're brown. And they're like, right, I want some brown people around me. Like, that is you literally
Look
showing
at
off.
How strong this boy is, huh?
It's a similar mindset. That's
it
what I'm
really
saying.
Is.
So, meme that. I want to see that as a meme. I think that works as a format.
It does. Like, it does.
Ooh, look at that. Ooh, you must be doing well. It's got a written comment on the site. So, firstly, Justin B says, there are reasons why I don't go into London. The first Lotus Eaters live event was the only exception that I have made in recent years, except when transferring from coach to train at Victoria. It's a very wise decision, Justin.
I think last time I went was to go see Amel and the Smith Sniffers in London, and I think... Excuse me, because the missus really likes punk bands, and loads of punk bands tend to play in London. I might have to go again soon.
I mean, the only reason I usually find myself there at this point is just to show foreigners around. Like, oh, I've come to Britain, let's meet up. I'm like, yeah, okay, where are you? London. Yeah, what do you want to see? Stuff in London.
I mean, you wanted to see English stuff, right? I mean, you're going to have to come out of London for that.
Oh, yeah, I tell them, I give them the tour. And then they're just sort of like, oh, yeah, where's all the English stuff? I'm like, I told you.
Yep. But yeah, on the west is...
You've got to dedicate like a proper day to go and find some little village, and that can be done. But it's just,
oh yeah, there's some lovely villages around the local area. Yeah, the West is going to S. Confused AF says rising crime and sexual assaults, deaths during a street party are just part and parcel of having an ineffectual twat like Sadiq Khan in charge. Yeah. Lord Nerevar, it looks like London is essentially just spoilers for our future now. They're ahead of us in the collapse and capture by foreign actors, but they're coming for the rest of us. Like Harry mentioned, Manchester had an awful degenerate pride event, and let's not forget about Linton on Ouse. They will not stop on until the English have been destroyed or at least fundamentally altered to something other than who we are. Stand up to them before it's too late. Yeah, I can only say. Do you know what this Linton on Ouse thing is? I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
I'm not.
Well, you let us know. I'll go through some more comments.
I'm just looking up the largest English cities, because his point is that, you know, it starts in London and then every other city. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, how far do I have to scroll until I could be like, nah, they're okay.
It disseminates from the cities. I mean, that's just basically what happened with the Cultural Revolution in China anyway. So, you know,
yeah, but it's like,
all
you
the
know,
city-dwelling freaks come out and ruin the countryside.
London, definitely not. Birmingham, definitely not.
Manchester,
definitely not. And then the fourth one here is West Yorkshire, which is the whole area, apparently.
Yeah, no, West Yorkshire's taken over.
I'm loading a 100 list. I mean, it's me.
I'm trying to think where would maybe be safe from it. What about...
Glasgow? No. Liverpool? No. Bristol? No.
What about Newcastle upon Tyne? Are the Geordies safe? Is the Geordie shore safe, Callum? I need to know.
No, it's being invaded by the Vikings again.
Ah, that's fine, as long as it's the Vikings.
Edinburgh. Leicester? What's Leicester like?
Have I been to Leicester?
Probably have. I can't remember.
I probably have.
Bradford? No.
I think my dad's from
Cardiff,
Leicester.
No. Belfast? Huh. Yeah.
Is Belfast doing all right?
One of the fellas I met when I was out in Afghanistan was from Belfast, and he was telling us about it's only started to change because one of the beauties of having a long history of terrorism is that the foreigners don't turn up. So,
well, I mean, the terrorist quota's already filled up, so.
Yeah. I mean, this is a fella who works in Muslim-majority countries all his life, so he knows the culture, and then he's got, like, a young daughter, and then he starts seeing changes in his neighborhood, and he's like, yeah, I'm glad she's growing up fast.
We're getting out of here. We're getting out.
Just saying, that's the reality of on the ground. So.
Yeah. Freewill 2112, my neighbors who are fundamentalist Christians think we are in the end times. Sometimes I think they have a point. Yeah, I'm getting there as well. I'm getting there. Whatever regime we're in at the moment, whatever empire is crumbling around us is certainly in the end times. And I can only hope that it crumbles and something beautiful can come out of it, like a phoenix. Joshua Bibby, is that how you pronounce his surname? I always forget. I'm sorry, but you guys need another Viking invasion to force your population to man up / grow up. If only the rest of Europe weren't equally as castrated. Seriously, I feel like we need a real major war to get Western humanity back in line. Maybe. The thing is, all the countries where the Vikings came from are also invaded right now as well and can't do much about it. Although,
Denmark. Yeah, Denmark's pretty good at...
Is Denmark doing all right? And to be fair, what is it, Sweden, the Swedish Democrats... like becoming the number one party in polling, and they're pretty based. So
yeah, I think it's next week we find out the Sweden Democrats become the government. So
do it, come on! I believe in you guys. Please clear them out. Captain Charlie the Beagle says regarding the West going to hell. Callum, is this segment a prequel to that French film you covered yesterday, Athena? Sure seems like it. Are you going to hate watch that when it comes out?
Yeah, probably.
I think you and Carl should do a video
on
it.
I hate watch it. I'll be enjoying that.
Oh, you'll just be there with your popcorn going like, ooh, neat.
France is falling apart.
Yeah, there with your glass of wine, laughing Britishly.
Australian wine, too.
Ooh. Free Will, again, says, if the West is going to hell, then the responsibility for it lies with our leaders, who, because of either malice or incompetence or both, have swung the wrecking ball despite the trust placed in them by their electorates. They should be made to answer to the people for what they have done. That's true, and I would say it is probably both. They, one, hate the culture they come from, and are also majorly incompetent. But I think... I don't know if they're going to be able to answer to the people. It kind of needs to be a switcheroo in the makeup of the elites to be able to really put them back in their place. Robert Longshore says, Hillsborough disaster comes to mind when looking at the videos of the crowds. Imagine just one truck of peace plowing into the crowd. Could it happen? I don't want to imagine that. That's... Robert Miller, hashtag mostly peaceful sexual assault punching and 200 arrests. Yeah, I can't wait for that to start trending.
An interesting question, though, because, you know, there could be an endless number of trucko pieces against us, and it doesn't matter.
Come with the new Happy Meal?
Yeah, trucko pieces, when they hit Germans or whatever, like, no one cares. But I wonder, because you remember when all those Nigerian girls were stolen by ISIS? Or was it Boko Haram stole them? And then even the presidential woman, alleged, was upset about it. Like, I'm wondering if a trucko piece hit the Nottingham Carnival, like...
I mean, it's not going to be hitting majority white people, is it?
So, something might actually happen? I don't know.
Are you suggesting the only solution is to set
no.
diversity against itself?
That happens naturally. I'm just saying how
happen.
Long until...
Well, yeah, I guess... The thing is, they'll be able to adapt around it. The only thing it'll do is show who's higher than who on the oppression hierarchy. That's the only thing it'll do. It won't
actually... Well, it's Jews and then blacks. I mean, we found that out. Do you remember when they were arguing, was slavery or the Holocaust worse in the United States?
Yeah.
And the slavery lost that one.
The thing that never happened over in the United States. Okay.
Do you know?
I don't remember this, no.
No, there was a big like bitch fight between... basically, there was little flashpoints of cultural contact of, is it worse to be anti-Semitic or anti-black? And anti-black lost to being anti-Semitic because the Holocaust is worse than slavery. It's like, okay. All right,
okay.
At least we know where the stack stands. Like.
All right, there's one big comment here before we go over to your segment, so I'll just read this one. It's from Sophie. All of this isn't happening in Denmark. I wonder why, just like you pointed out. Ask Harry, I gave him the whole spiel last Friday. Yes, I still need to look into some of those people that you're talking about. Like, I've still got my links open here. Inga Stolberg, Rasmus Paludan. I'm sorry if I'm butchering these names.
No, I'm laughing because Danish names sound funny.
They do sound pretty funny.
The potato thing again.
Honestly, as I talk to Danes around the place, it's kind of amazing how split the Danish population seems to be about the immigration issue. We have the regular activists, but at least there's many who are firmly on the know it's time to go home train. What's really nice, though, is that here in Denmark, people are willing to speak openly about it, and more so in recent years. There has really been a boom in people clearly stating, Muslims need to go home now. It's, it's pretty based. It's also funny because what I see is that the older boomer generation who are all like, oh no, we can't be offensive, but it's the younger millennials who are louder with, oh no, this can't take over. And I do think a big reason behind that is, well, we are the ones consuming YouTube comments and get to see content and get to see this sort of footage from other countries, and it makes us go, nope. Yeah, I think the younger generations that aren't captured by the activists are probably more based than ever for the most part.
I'd love to go and spend like 2 weeks in Denmark just hanging out with the political system just to see how it works.
I can be with my people.
Fellow
Vikings.
Rapists. Anyway, but the thing there is...
Proud tradition.
They do seem to have a liberal society that actually functions as advertised, as in if the population gets an idea that maybe this is not good for the country, it does seem to filter through the political system of being like, actually, we need to deal with this.
Yeah.
Whereas here, like, everyone knows, but just the MPs don't do anything.
I think that among the general population, people are starting to talk about it a little bit more over here in England. But like you say, the actual political class are still completely zip shut about it.
There isn't that cross-pollination in the way there is seemingly in Denmark. I mean, I know it's not perfect and it's got problems, but it doesn't have our problems, which is distinction. Anyway, let's go to Nigeria being based. So... Shaker Silver says, denying Europeans the identity of indigenous is clearly intentional because it's the only place people of the West can say they belong in and have a claim to. If you aren't Indigenous in your own homeland, then you have nowhere you belong to and may advocate in favor of. 100%. It is it is something which needs to be hit down from everyone who wants to try and make a claim that we have something to defend, because it's one of the opening lines from like The Strange Death of Europe, where Douglas Murray is like, well, we don't actually have a place we can go to after this. If you're a, you know, part of the British Pakistani community and things go bad for you, it's like you literally have Pakistan. Whereas, the English,
I've got England, and that's it.
Go to Northern Ireland. It's like, really? Anyway, Anonymi says, I would like to make a slight correction on the Spider-Man flag issue. It was the Nexus mod, a UK company, which had become the centralized place for mods. The admin went insane, as usual. I'm not sure if it was a code change. I believe it was a texture change due to the Spider-Man PC modding tool. But users noted that it's now become like the Middle East versions. To add insult to injury, however, Nexus Mods has allowed mods that change all flags to the intersectional flag.
Okay. Well, thank you for correcting me on some of that.
I do wonder, like, if the Nazis had won, what the gaming world would look like.
How much better things would be today? No, I'm
joking. No. Because, like, you can't imagine a reverse version of the, you know, Reich mods or whatever the hell it would be called. Well, you'd almost be compelled to download the mod that would change all the flags in the Western games to party flags. Don't you wonder?
I think the games would probably be made like that anyway.
Yeah,
if that was the case. Yeah. You wouldn't need a mod. They would have just come preloaded like that.
You know how the Germans still have that restriction that you can't like show blood, otherwise it gets an 18 rating? So
they still have that? Is Germany still really let's not question Germany's autism.
Are the Germans autistic? A question from Harry Robinson. But they, yeah, I mean, like, TF2 still has everyone being a robot, and when you have blood, it's oil. I don't know where that thought was going, but...
Just a funny little bit of trivia.
Just imagining about how the world would be in, like, the modern aspects, and it wouldn't be very different. It would just be a different flag. Colin P says, sorry, you morons, there have been humans in Europe since probably before there were in America. How far back do you have to go to be Indigenous? 100% there were in Europe before America, so that's true. And you don't have to go back at all. You just have to have brown skin or look like the Indians.
Yep.
That's the international definition of running on Yankee logic. I love that phrase. I think it was AA or Curse said that. It's just, yeah, Yankee logic. Yeah. Thomas Howell says, complete aside, but Nigerian Guinness is delicious and lethal. Nigerian Netflix must be sweating bullets, however. God, yeah. That'd be interesting. How are they going to make any money? It's like, well, you've got to start making loads of originals in Nigeria, or the regional aspect is just dead. Callum Dayton says, I have a question for the race commie and sectionals. Why are brown and dark-skinned people better? I don't actually know if they argue they do. I think they just argue they should be in charge because white is evil.
Well, it's because white has oppressed them. Therefore, I imagine they probably think that it's probably like, oh, the noble savage sort of idea, just taken to its ultimate conclusion. We, as the evil whites, have been oppressing them for so long, and yet they've not let it break their spirit, which just makes them inherently better.
Well, it's like when we talk about critical race theory. When you read their texts, and as Carl summed it, they categorize the white students as evil, and that's why the white students in American schools are taught that they're evil, whereas the black students are taught that they're inferior. It's not...
There's no positivity in this.
No, none. I mean, like, they treat the black kids like their children, even when they're fully grown men. And I don't actually think they think they're better. I think they just think that the whites are evil and therefore deserve to die. There are a few questions after this, but it's certainly something I'd love to get an answer to. Since I know a bit of history, not all of it certainly, and only bits of it, but with the Woman King movie coming out soon, maybe there be a shift because people start asking questions. White people are evil. How's the intersectional commie? You're white too. They usually are, but they'll cheer on their own execution. Taffy Duck says, I love the saloon position. Just gives me a good excuse.
Salon's
position, sorry.
That sounds like something very different.
The Red Dead position would be fun, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what that would be. Just give me a good excuse to add every single employee to the list of traitors/hostile actors to be dealt with after the revolution. I also add any people I meet IRL to this list if they repeat the same lie, and I let them know. Okay.
To be fair, that would be a good response. I might start doing that. If somebody just annoys me in private, I'll just go, you're on the list.
I feel like you get a visit from Prevent. Just go around in Tesco's being like, yeah, you're on the list. Skaven.
I'd like to see the response that I'd get, though. That'd be great.
Confusion.
No, fear. Strike fear into the hearts of my enemies. Thomas Howell...
You can't induce fear if they think you're autistic.
I'm terrified of autistic people. I don't know about you.
Okay.
Thomas Howell said, I think the current number of exit deaths post lockdown is still below the number of COVID deaths, but the important thing is that it's set to overtake it, and shortly. That's sad to hear, to be perfectly honest, because as much as we always said that lockdowns would be a terrible idea, it's sad to know that people are still suffering as a result of them. Shaker Silver, but Callum, who decides what is a useless or worthwhile degree? I say if a degree is worthwhile, then it should pay for itself when the student gains employment. Otherwise, students can still waste government money by gaining an education that they don't make use of.
Exactly how UKIP defined it. Yes.
Yes. Robert Longshore, the only issue I see with training... I think most people are just responding to your comments there. I'll see if I can find one that's relevant. As someone on the front line in the NHS, we all said on my department that the lockdowns were to drastically reduce people with comorbidities. Surprise, surprise, those patients with the pesky expensive comorbidities have been dropping like flies. Yeah. Ewan Baker, all Rishi cared about was making a woke 50p saying diversity built Britain, which I dream of whenever I get them and stamp a WE on top. I'm sorry, I just... couldn't really understand that. Apologies. I'll read one more before we finish. Bald Eagle, 1787. Ah, we finally got to the heart of the matter for Rishi. You don't deserve tax cuts because we're trying to take all your money away from you because there are horrible repercussions if we don't tax you more. Yeah, that's the logic.
Well, now, Bombshell, it's time to end the show.
Back to the studio.
If you'd like more from us, go to the studio at lotuseaters.com, of course. Otherwise, we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you and goodbye.